that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so like 57's the new 27, I think, is the way we're looking at it. Like, 57 to 60 is the new 27 to 30 for rock stars. Like,
exactly.
And so I'm starting to just
they're preserving a lot better these days.
Yeah, right? modern science is really helping them out there, but still, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose, so... Oh, all right. All right. Well, that's as good an intro as any we're going to give. Not to be too morbid, but welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer, your host, as always, with me, the Jedi Cole Houston. We're feeling a little punchy, and I hope we didn't bring you in on too maudlin a note, but we were just talking about a brief moratorium for Prince, my favorite musical artist, too. Not to date the show, but the recent passing of Prince has hit us all kind of hard. Also, Prince had a comic book. Do you remember talking about that?
I do indeed. In fact, I'd kind of half forgotten about the Prince comic book for a little bit there, and that kind of reminded me of the same. And you know, one of the things that oh, by the way, it's, I think, memoriam, not moratorium. The moratorium is pretty much a given now.
Did I say more? I was still thinking about,
I mean,
his it's, making
it's pretty
the
much
purple.
A moratorium on Prince right now.
Nobody has a moratorium on Prince. I think Saturday Night Live did like three Prince specials. You know, you have all the people now that were like, I loved Prince. Prince was the... No, you didn't. I know you didn't. You're a liar.
That's right.
You're a dirty liar, and I know you're a dirty liar, because I love Prince. I used to do Purple Rain at karaoke every week, and then after I was done, I would retire it, and then just bring it right back out of retirement the next week. Like, I'm never doing Purple Rain again, man. And then the next week, I'd be like, yeah, do Purple Rain. Sure, do Purple Rain. But yeah, he had a comic book by Marvel.
Someone was trying to like auto-build a library of Prince music videos. Because apparently Prince's passing was so dynamic that it forced MTV to actually show music videos again.
Oh my God, I don't know if they did that for Bowie. Did they do that for Bowie?
I don't know. I think this was it, because it seemed to get a lot of fanfare for happening. And apparently, in just sort of push button, you know, all things Prince, mm-hmm. somewhere in the midst of all this string of videos was a DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Are you kidding?
No.
Oh my God, that's awesome. That's how far away from music the MTV's become, that they can't even program music right.
Yeah.
Oh, but much like Prince stole our heart, tonight, Hey Kids Comics is going to be talking about comic book thefts.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, yeah, professionals. We are smack dab in the middle, towards the beginning, but still in the middle. We're at the point which Perseus
the beginning of the middle,
the Agamemnon. A story arc about true comic book crime. What's the name of our story arc?
This is Comic Book Capers.
And this issue is 178, and this issue is titled, I love this, some of Cole's finest work in the next four or five issues for titling. So what's the name of this one?
And I do want to point out that since I'm receiving these accolades, that the Comic Book Capers story arc title, basically the glue that is holding all this together was Andrew's.
Well, my glue is strong and virile.
Yes, well, that's what I've heard. But I did then take that and break it down into the five constituent parts of our arc. And this is Exit Through the Comic Shop.
I love it. It's so good. It's so good. And tonight we're talking about the comic book theftises. Sorry, I'm running on like no sleep and 14 days of work in a row, so you'll have to excuse me. Comic book thefts and the ramifications and the intrinsic loss therein. Because in my research, and again, we've actually done research. I know, it's shocking, right? It's been a while. What I found was that this isn't like getting... Now, I've never had any of my comics stolen in any kind of real series. I've lent comics that I've never gotten back. But that's on me. That's not on somebody taking them. That's on me letting the wrong people borrow my comics. But I've never had a comic book stolen or comic books stolen. Cole, did you ever, while you were running Piece of the Action, have anything stolen like that?
We did indeed. It was actually one of the first. It was the second swap meet, the second comic toy and collectible swap meet that was ever held, was actually put on by a Piece of the Action Collectibles. And since the shop would be closed that Saturday, for the show, I brought all of my subscriber I brought my box of subscriber books up.
Okay.
And we basically had that on hand for any of the subscribers who wanted to stop by and
pick up their books. That was darn nice of you.
Yeah. At the end of the day, while I was getting everything, you know, kind of gathered together, I placed that box on top of a table near where we were collecting money all day. And I came back later, and a number of the, you know, harder-to-replace titles had been removed.
Really?
They didn't take the entire box. They didn't take everything out of the box. Someone meticulously and deliberately removed the specific titles that they wanted.
So here's one thing that I was noticing when I'm reading about, and I'm not talking about the collector's thefts, right? I'm not talking about somebody who had...
Yeah, and of course, yeah, this wasn't a tremendous amount of money. I never owned anything that was worth, you know, even $100. But still, it was annoying because then a lot of that was irreplaceable on reorder, and then I was sort of forced to run around and track those down at retail and then sell them at retail.
Right, so you had to do the work. You had to put in the legwork. But so in reading
there
about...
There was nothing like a case of apparently a Texas-based comic dealer of Worldwide Comics selling at a comic convention in New York back in 2010 who happened to, I guess, spot someone trying to make away with a couple of very valuable comics.
Okay.
We're talking in the order of, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. And apparently the owner chased the guy down and captured him. And
really?
To formally get him charged with grand larceny.
Wow.
Possession of stolen property. And meanwhile... Any good arch criminal, he had an accomplice who did make off with a handful of other rare comics, including the $11,000 valued Wiz Comics number one.
Holy shit, that's okay, so here's the thing. Number one, when I'm researching this, what I'm finding is that a lot of the shop thefts, you know, like your local comic shop thefts, it would appear that a lot of these are, for lack of a better term, inside jobs. And I don't mean necessarily by the people that work there, but by the regulars.
Yeah, I think there are people who get a good idea of, you know, what all's going on, when, where, what, and how. And, you know, especially if you're someone who was inclined to that kind of malfeasance anyway.
Right.
And you thought you saw some value in this, or even if you didn't, I mean, good God, people will steal stuff just to steal it. And,
right.
You know, if they steal something that's worthless, there's always a trash can.
That's right. It doesn't matter.
It's almost like storage wars. You know, people will steal stuff just to see what's in it.
Oh, it's absolutely true.
Without the out-of-pocket, you know. So, you know, I think that if you're inclined to steal from someone, it's very easy to create if not a relationship, certainly a history.
Right.
Where, you know, you see a lot of the same people all the time, and after a while, what guard you may have had, if any, it begins to soften.
Right. Right. Because they're one of you. That's the thing. It's one of the most, in my opinion, and maybe it's because I'm such a comic book fan, you know, and maybe it's because we've talked about in the past that even for all of our faults and for all of our petty arguments that we have about, you know, our favorite thing in the world, we're still one of the most open and inviting groups of people I've ever met.
That's absolutely on point.
And that makes this a very insidious crime that I know the comic shop owners that I know, guys like Ron, you know, guys like Ron Killingsworth, guys like your guy that works at Duncanville Books, right?
Andy from the owner of Duncanville Bookstore, yeah. The guys at Red Pegasus. You know, folks like that that are doing the good, honest work, and they're not trying to, you know.
And they're trying to build. Like Tiffany from Role to Play, right? Like trying to build a community, trying to, you know, inviting people that are like-minded into their world with a giant heart. And then somebody on the inside uses that, you know, to steal from them. That is just insidious. Like, for instance, in my research, I came across a guy that owned a place called Riverhouse Traders, and it's in Wichita, Kansas. And he had $300,000 more to the point, of comic books stolen from him. And he collected a lot of stuff, apparently. He had 4 million comic books and 180,000 toys, right? Like so he had a real deal shop. And he had $300,000 worth of comics stolen. Now this guy, right? He would give comics to kids if they got A's on their report cards for free. He would go around dressed as Santa Claus and give kids like collectibles and comics. Like this was a good guy. So my question for you is, you get somebody like this, right? What does that do to that community when something like this happens? Like,
I think I can certainly answer that, because it does color your opinion. Even a minor theft like I suffered, you don't soon get over that. That blow never really softens. And I can only imagine how grossly that's magnified in a situation where you're talking about something on the order of, you know, $1,000 comic or $10,000 comic or something like that. Because, you know, even if you got it at a steal, chances are you still spent somewhere along the lines in the thousands to possess that, to have that in your sellable collection.
Right. And, you know, the guy at the end, you know, says it's not the, you know, he says he goes in and he bought a new security system and a steel reinforced door and cameras for his store. He says that, but what really hurts him the most about this is that he was not going to be able to help families because he didn't have the toys to give them on Christmas. That's who you're stealing from. That's who comic shop owners are. Like, I don't know. I do know maybe one out of the probably 50 retailers, comic shop owners, hobbyist retailers that I know that would not fit this bill. Like one guy that I know that I'd be like, well, that guy's just gonna. I could imagine that guy setting up the crime himself to collect the insurance money. But but you know, like 49 other guys that I know, and women. I shouldn't say guys and women. They fit this criteria. You know, that's what makes it the worst thing in the world. Is that you're stealing from the best people on the planet, you bunch of dicks. I'm mad again. This whole arc makes me really mad, Cole.
Oh yeah, this should. I mean, this should incense people, because, well, the other thing is the fun is now gone. You know, the fact that he now has, this owner has surveillance cameras, that now this has to become the sort of thing where you have to have that eye in the sky just to engage in having some kind of comfort level again, because somebody ruined it.
Right. Somebody took
else.
The family. You know, somebody took the family out of your house and made it a business now. Like is that when the switch gets flipped from being a clubhouse for your friends that make enough money that you can keep the place open and have everybody in and talk about who would win in the fight or the new art on Batman or DC Rebirth, to it having to be an actual business?
Yeah.
Because
I think to varying degrees that is going to be the case, because it has to change a lot of, you know, who you are, especially when you run into a situation where you have, you know, large scale crime like that.
Right.
And, you know, some of that stuff, you know, just having these things on display make you a bit of a target. Perhaps so, but you have to imagine a lot of this stuff, those stealing it probably don't have an easy path to peddle it.
Correct. And that, yeah, you know, that's
it's
something
not
else.
Like going and stealing the gold Krugerrands.
well, that's that, yeah, this is an ocean. Yeah, exactly.
It's a bit trickier. It's like, you know, on a grander, you know, writ small, it is akin to the, you know, the people that go and steal great works of art.
But I think Cole, I think it's the same. I think it's the same.
A very finite customer base at that point.
You do. No, you absolutely do. I think it's very much exactly the same. I also think it's akin to, and maybe this is just because of the industry I work in, I think it's akin to stealing a cell phone. Because the only people you're going to be able to sell these to are people that don't know they're stolen. You're not going to be able to go into a store and sell them, especially not in the town that you stole them in. for sure.
Exactly.
But you're only going to be able to sell them to people who don't know any better. That's the only people you're going to, and then they're not going to be able to sell it, you know.
Exactly.
So.
Well, and we'll address a certain key issue that thankfully, ideally, makes it a little less lucrative to engage in these high-end types of thefts. But, you know, it's not the sort of thing you can put an ad in the paper or, you know, it's not like selling a stolen car.
Right, right. Or you can't even necessarily go on eBay and put it up on eBay because real comic collectors are going to know about this and they're going to be able to pick that out. You know, if all of a sudden a Justice League issue 2 pops up and you know that you've seen a story of the fact that this guy just got his Justice League issue 2 stolen, you're going to get caught. Eventually, yes. You're going to get caught. And that's something. The way you would traffic this is something we're going to address in the last issue of this story arc, in our big story, the big show. How exactly you would launder a comic book, which is a really interesting concept, but
and hopefully not come across as like you know a primer on.
Right. We're not going to. Dude, this is not how you make a pipe bomb. We're not going to be those guys. But there, you know, and the other thing that I wanted to talk about, and I'll use this as a jumping off point to talk about the other case that I'd like to talk about, which was a place called Comics Plus in Macon, Georgia. You know, they had another six figure theft where the thief made off with almost a full set of the Justice League and a set of the X-Men.
Oh my.
And it was the Justice League set alone was 100,000, let alone what the you know, X-Men set was. You know, and they say in there that most of those were, number one, they're covered by insurance, which I want to talk about a little bit, because I think, I have a problem with that, because on two levels, and I want to know how you feel about this specifically, Cole, is that insurance pays you money. They don't pay you back your comics.
Exactly, yeah. There's no one has a backlog or a storehouse, they don't have something to replace you item for item.
Right.
Much like, you know, insuring your home, there's only so much that can be genuinely replaced, and there's some things that are frankly irreplaceable. And in a situation like this, you have things that, you know, you can get that kind of money, but you're not going to be able to go and spend the value to replace it where you can still sell it at that same amount. You know, you're not going to come across that sweetheart deal you came across 10 years ago.
Well, and the other thing is the speculator collector, and in this realm, that is a legitimate term. Okay, we're not talking about your copy, your you know, foil embossed copy of Ultra Force number 1 here. We're talking about this guy had the first 8 issues of Justice League of America plus the first 20 issues of X-Men stolen. So, little different world. Once you take those comics out of rotation, the intrinsic value of the remaining comics goes up dramatically. So as an economic effect, when somebody goes in and steals these issues of this comic book, effectively taking them off of the board, the remaining comics that are up for grab jump in value based on how many are left in rotation.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, where the thieves are kind of foolish into themselves is that they, you know, what do you think the first thing that's going to happen is absolutely everyone else who deals in comics on a professional basis is going to be immediately notified.
Right. And
so it's not like, you know, you can just go to the comic shop in the next, you know, other side of town and peddle the thing.
Well, and the comic shop owners that I know, and there's a code of honor, if you will. Obviously there's competition. You know, you look at something like Dallas or Fort Worth, and the per capita comic book shop rate is pretty outrageous. You know, there are a lot of comic book shops, and they're in competition.
Oh, yes. It is very much like in the height of the 80s, 90s collector-speculator era right now in a lot of major cities.
Right.
Where you have this situation where the saturation is there, but at the same time, thankfully, you don't have the massive, you know, step right up, put your kids through college with the funny books, step right up. You know, that was the era I would dare say is the Barnum was Right era.
The Barnum was, I like it. I like it. He was born out of time. If he could have been born into the...
he was born at the ideal time, but
that's true.
He's sort of like the, it's almost like sort of social Darwinism that he was practicing.
Right, right.
Is that, you know, much like Darwin, he recognized trends that occur naturally.
He also understood the gullibility of people to a T.
Yeah, so, you know, I think to various degrees, whether it was Spider-Man number one, we've all fallen into the Barnum trap, but it's a trap. But,
I still think we need to do a show where it's literally all the people that we know that collect comics, and we just sit down for like 5 minutes with each of them and just talk about the trap, the marketing trap that they fell into. Because mine was Youngblood, yours was Web of Spider-Man. Like, we all fell for something. Like,
oh, and you know, at one point when we had a piece of the Action Collectibles, it was a fairly minimal Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one when the series was relaunched.
Yeah,
I believe by Mirage they were, you know, getting back into that.
Right,
and it was a simple thing like buy 10, get a free variant cover. So okay, I'll buy in at that. Had the variant cover taped to the wall at the convention I took it to.
Yeah,
packed up after the weekend. Still hanging there for somebody to take down, throw in the trash at the end of the...
Oh!
Clearing the place out.
Oh! But, okay, so let's get on to the one that you wanted, because I'm curious, because this is a 180 from your position prior.
Yeah, we discussed a little bit before the show. I've taken a little bit... I don't think it's a complete 180, but I have taken a little jog off the path here. I'm blazing a new trail for myself. And that is on the subject of grading.
Oh, I'm real curious.
The research for this, and especially the upcoming fifth episode of this arc, brought to light an angle on grading that I had never considered, because it would never occurred to me, never would have. And so I begin to see that while I will maintain that this is overly marketed and grossly overly utilized, there is a purpose that can be presented. It's a bit like, okay, let's say, you know, society is in decline and you want to put in a Brinks system in your house. You know, if you've got a modest two-bedroom home near the city, you know, probably a basic security system would do the trick. You don't need, you know, floodlights on 20-foot poles and concertina wire and motion detectors in the yard and this sort of you know, Pink Panther sequel-esque network of electronic security that should be impossible to breach. And to me, that is the marketing of grading, which replaced the protection with value.
Okay.
Or perceived value. And I think that grading is marketed in the same way. It's like, well, you know, couple of break-ins in your neighborhood, you really ought to consider throwing up a laser grid around the house.
Have you seen that, though? Because I can't say that I have. It makes absolute sense, and it actually makes more sense to me than the you grade them, they're hermetically sealed, don't touch them, they're in carbonite so that you can put your kid through college. The idea that these have value to you, so you are essentially protecting them, makes a lot more sense to me. So I'll side with you on that. But
yeah, I think from that standpoint, but is that value to you worth it?
Right.
Worth the investment? But the other thing is that they're marketed in the way as if, you know, ADT had gone nuts and tried to convince everyone they needed a $10,000 security system that they would install in, like, you know, the homes of the rich and famous. And it's like, you know, there's like 17,000 feet of wire here we don't need to use for this install because that house isn't that damn big.
It's like if Brinks instituted the purge and then showed up at your house like 10 minutes, like an hour before the purge.
I mean, I don't feel like I'm going to need a panic room in my house. Other than just, you know, I think it'd be kind of, I could use the extra space.
Can you build a bunker?
The problem is, if I had a panic room, it'd be like, ah, crap. Indoor garage was not a good idea. So, you know, could I interest you in some more crap.
Well, you would just have to see the thing about a panic room, much like slabbing, and for you or I, a panic room would just be full of action figures. Like, this is the stuff. Grab the cats. We'll grab the the figures are already in there. That's what it is. Come in here, hit the button. It's like Jodie Foster, but
would leave a small space in which to standing room only.
Standing room. Yeah, you would have a stool, like one of those cane stools.
Exactly. So it's a bit like that in that from the standpoint of the value of a comic, the grading company or companies have convinced people that this is the only value your comics will ever have, because frankly, no modern comic is going to maintain any kind of strong value. I guarantee to you at its height of its value, something like, say, The Dark Knight number one first printing, or number two, for example, first printing, because the second printing is very difficult to distinguish unless
always.
You know the visual.
Yeah.
Well, because at the end of the point where you were going to second, third, fourth printings of things, which was unheard of.
Right.
When the second printing of The Dark Knight Returns number two, the printer, the publisher, someone forgot to insert the legend second printing.
Oh.
And thankfully, whether by accident or design, almost certainly by design, the interior cover is the bat symbol.
Okay.
Both editions. But it's almost like you took that bat symbol and then on the second printing, put that bat symbol right on top of the other one, but you're not, and you did it manually, not like with a computer or something, so you didn't quite line it up 100%.
Oh.
So there's literally like a little bit of a line where it's an imperfect.
Like a shadow effect almost?
Yeah, exactly. And that is the only distinguishing feature between the two. And it has been decades. How many people would even recognize that? And I wonder to this day, speaking of comic book crimes, how many, again, by accident or design, how many of these things are being sold as first printings? Because effectively, nobody's ever seen a second printing.
Right.
But it would be like, you know, at the height of its value, any of these, their height has come and gone.
Right.
That star has long since faded. It's been replaced by new stars. You really have to go back. I mean, if you look at the hardcore comic book buying, the guys with the big wads of cash, you look at their ad, they're buying comics from the 40s to the 70s.
Correct.
Or the 40s to the 60s. You know why? Because everything after about 1975, forget it, or almost everything. There's a few rare exceptions, but those only occur because of minimal print runs. So the graders have gone and sold everybody this idea that this is how you increase the value. And what you're and they're clouding, you know, people's judgment is clouded to the fact that how much did I spend? It's like one of the things we talk about at one of the panels Catherine created at AllCon is, okay, I've got my giant collection that I want to retire on, and I'm spending $2,000 a year to store it in
right.
off-site storage.
Right.
So every single year, my collection is devalued by $2,000. If my collection is worth $100,000, it's worth $90,000 in 10 years.
Right.
And people don't think about those things. This is much the same. It doesn't have that long-term expense. So, you know, ask yourself, is there a net? You know, if I bought this for 10, if it's worth 20, and let's say it's worth $30 in 10 years, and I spent $20 to get it slabbed or graded. So that position's well known. What changed my mind is the things that do have that intrinsic value. Your $5,000, $10,000 comics, absolutely they're worth getting graded because they're not something anyone would dare open up and read.
Right.
And protecting them in a hermetically sealed state, just, you know, there is an authentication that this is genuinely what it is inside this case. And the other thing I wasn't aware of is not only are these things serialized, so, you know, you have something, if I come and nab your
Moon Knight number one, don't you even talk about it. Don't you even joke.
Yeah, so if I was to, like, snag that off somebody's display at a convention and then go try to resell it, you know, an interested buyer, a professional interested buyer, or even an amateur interested buyer who has the foresight can look up that code. Oh, what do you know? It's burning in my hands.
Well, I think that because if you look at a graded comic, right, they have a barcode in the upper right-hand corner. And I'm almost positive that like you said earlier off mic, that those are entered into a database.
Oh, that's rather what I mean is you can actually look up if a buyer that is either a professional or a shrewd amateur is aware of this, they're going to research that barcode and say, okay, yeah, this is burning in my hands. This is hot goods.
Right.
You shouldn't even have this in your possession. Because I can look here and say, oh, looky, looky, here's somebody, you know, Big Bill's Mega Comic Empire up in Muskogee reported this stolen from their collection. So then the would-be thief is thinking, oh, well, you know, I'll just crack it out of the case. And what I didn't, you know, even beyond that, that the obvious sort of the barcoding is, you know, outside of the barcoding, who's to say where this came from? And I found this up in Grandma's attic.
Right.
In a, you know, box of old baby food jars and in a box of hair.
Just a box of hair. Just yeah, a well, box well, of loose hair.
It was like the locks of hair of everyone that came to the family reunion.
What kind of family reunion are you having? Where
everybody went home with a little bit of a lopsided hairstyle. Then
I often go to my family's golem parties. Just making wow. effigies of each. Yeah, yeah.
I think Grandma, Grandpa considered himself a voodoo houndgun and a sampling of everyone. But wow, this is really gone.
It's taking a turn. I like it. I like the turn.
Strange new places. But when those things are graded, they don't just like go through, yeah, this looks like we're called a, you know, 7.9. We'll call it 8.6. There is in addition to the barcode, if you're with your $2,000 comic, what you're getting for your money is the fact that the person grading it, the person meticulously and very carefully checking, is making a note, like a, you know, this is like that guy at the table when the archaeologist brings out the latest found, you know, the clay pots at Abu Simbel or something. You know, they don't just like toss it in a box.
She's like, yep, that's it. Throw it in a box. Yeah.
They go and, you know, sketch the thing out and make notes about all the little crenellations and stuff like that. So you actually have somebody there very carefully cataloging all of the foxing of the pages and the minor tears, discolorations, literally like a very detailed lab report.
Right.
On a, you know, it's like they do an autopsy before they put it in a coffin. And that further, you know, if the book is stolen, you can actually research and say, oh, you know, this rarely comes on the market. Let's take a peek here. And, oh, here's one that was stolen. Funny how in the, you know, lower left-hand corner there's this little bit of this coloration that matches what I'm holding and, you know, what I've got presented to me. So even taking it out, it's not as simple as just having it in your hands anymore to resell. So that, from that standpoint, I have changed my tune a bit on grading or slabbing of comics, because there is a purpose that can serve. Will that protect anyone stealing your Web of Spider-Man number one? Nobody's going to research.
Right.
They're going to pay a prospective seller 50 cents or a dollar for that, tops. And that's if they're just like really hurting or have a lot of call for it. You know.
So I've got a question about grading.
It's rather like, you know, stealing a bunch of videos and taking them over to Movie Trading Company. You know, you're not taking those stolen goods in to make the big bucks.
Right. So do you think, like, do they contact you? I'm going to do this. Okay, this is my challenge. Okay? This is my Hey Kids Comics challenge for the next couple months. I'm going to go through my comic collection and find a comic that would probably be graded between a 1 and a 2. Not a 10, between a 1 and a 2, and I'm going to send it off to be graded. I want to know what they do. I want to know if they contact you.
It's funny you mention that, because I think one of the most brilliant reactions to the advent and the rise of grading was Richard, whose name I can't remember his last name, but the owner of Bedrock City Comics Chain in Houston, Texas, is rather famous in professional comic circles for having the irreverent brilliance of taking the absolute worst comic copy of a comic book he had ever received in possession and sending it off to have it graded. And it famously has the lowest grade point of anything that
that's fantastic
was ever graded by that company.
Like, I want to do that. I want to know. I'll report back on what they do, because what I want to know is, do they contact you and go, Mr. Farmer, you're going to pay us $20 to grade this thing at like a 1.5.
It's rather like the dealer in Austin Powers.
Right?
You're showing, you want to be hit, sir?
Like, are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. I know. Are you positive? Yes, I'm absolutely positive. I want to find out what they do. Just the worst, and the worst subject matter, too. Like, just like just some awful, like, Kickers, Inc. number one in a horrible condition.
Yeah.
Just to see. All right, so.
Okay, I'm going to have to start watching the quarter bins to find what kind of god-awful title and in god-awful condition I might be able to come by.
Yeah, because I want to know, I really want to know how they react. Like, this is going to give me an idea of their legitimacy as, you know, as an organization, where if they reach out to me and go, you know, I'm a counselor for the grading company, and I just really want to know if you know that what you've sent us was a 1.5 grade copy of Kickers, Inc. number one. Are you aware of that? Are you of sound mind and body?
According to our metrics, Kickers, Inc. is automatically can't be higher than a 5.
Right? We can't legally grade it higher than a 5.
Yeah, it can't be more than a 5 because it suggests some intrinsic value if you... which is simply not there.
All right, all right. So let's talk about the one that got this issue put on the board. The big score, if you will.
Yes. Before we get into that, I do want to point out something that occurred to me, and I think this fits here, because we're talking about thefts against. We started out with thefts against comic shop owners,
right?
And comic exhibitors at conventions. And, you know, that certainly bears out to people who've had their personal collections stolen. We touched on that slightly. But the really rare dynamic, you know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And at the height of the collector-speculator era,
okay,
which sadly we're trying, seem to be hell-bent to return to.
Right.
You know, during your
Everything
X-Men
sick,
one
man.
Multi-cover extravaganza, Death of Superman, Gen 13, 13 covers, and all that crap.
Right.
And everybody owned a comic shop, whether they had any business sense or not, because it was that easy. It was literally, you could turn a profit or you could keep afloat and have no idea what you were doing. And I can cite many examples of those, which I won't by name. But I could not tell you where. Not out of, you know, any sense of respect for this comic shop, which I feel certain had to have gone out of business eventually. But it was, I think, somewhere in Texas, it might have been elsewhere, that became notorious. It was a comic shop in a shopping mall.
Okay.
So, naturally, it was, you know, you couldn't just walk in from the front door.
Right.
And like any comic shop during this era, it became like the comic, like the stock exchange.
Sure.
In people's minds, they looked upon the comic shop as, you know, here's where I go to trade in my stocks for money.
Here's where the day traders go.
This is where I liquidate my investment. And people would often come in with a box of comics. Well, if you're going to sell your collection, what do you bring in the door first? Because you've got, you know, 2 or 5 or 10 heavy long boxes full of stuff. You bring in the long box that's got your best stuff.
Right.
You bring in the top specimens because that's what you want to lure them in with, and then the rest is just, you know, here for, you know, your quarter bin fodder. I'll get that out of the car as you're looking this over and negotiate. Well, people, there were at least, you know, 2 to 3 or maybe even more cases, of, you know, verified examples from what I'm told, where people would come in to sell a collection. They would bring in that initial box and begin the dialogue, and interest would be shown. Absolutely, I'd be interested in buying your collection. What else you got? Well, I got to go out to the car and get another box, another couple of boxes. You go do that.
Right.
This box of comics just arrived, would be spirited away somewhere into the shop. Eventually, the person would return to this end of the mall and present this comic shop. What can I do for you? Well, you're interested in buying my comics. Well, let me see what you got. No, you already got a box of them. You're interested. No, I hadn't. I've never seen you before. No, of course, naturally these people are going to get very incensed. And by remaining calm and using the mall security as a private police force for themselves, have the angry would-be seller ejected from the mall.
Right.
And cleaned up, I'm sure, a tidy profit on a bunch of stolen comics.
Ugh.
which, you know, I'm surprised in this situation, and it probably did eventually happen if anybody had their wits about me, about them, because, you know, these creeps were very much taking upon themselves the burden of proof.
Right.
And it would be simple enough to completely remove that from the mall itself through a different route. You know, I'm surprised someone didn't, after this had been reported a couple of times, set up a situation where they brought in the comics and had someone, you know, have a couple of undercover officers, one bring in the comics, one hang around and watch the transaction happen.
Right.
And
that sucks.
You know, yeah, that. But that's how cutthroat, that's how bad, that's how convinced the collecting community was of the intrinsic value.
Right.
That, you know, the bad guys were on both sides of the fence.
Right, right. Yeah, makes me so mad. All right, yeah, all right. Oh, so
I want to go down there and just completely destroy these guys.
Right. All right, so let's go to something a little more lighthearted, even though it's not. It has at least a happy ending. So the one that brought this whole idea, this whole issue of this story arc into focus was in doing research on you know, comic book crimes. I had completely forgot it and completely lost to the old man brain that back in 2000.
But don't you start.
Oh, I have it now, man.
I have exclusive rights on the show to the old man brain.
I have leased it. I have bought at least some IP rights to old man brain. I've dealt with it for the past 8 years. That gives me some right to establish it at least in a franchise form for myself.
Okay. I will franchise that out to you then.
That actor, auteur, producer, director, musician, wild man, Nick Cage had himself had a bunch of comic books stolen from his a home of all places. Now,
and the thing is, Cage was a huge fan of comics, and you know, as his star rose, his tastes in comics turned to where many a collector might like them to go.
But right.
At least at the time, he could afford to. God knows he wasn't paying taxes. So.
But so what ended up happening was in 2011, an issue of, and in much the same way, I think the last issue of this story arc is going to go, I don't want to give away too much, but an issue of Action Comics number one was found in a storage locker. It ended up being the same copy of Action Comics number one that belonged to Nick Cage. So it was stolen from Nick Cage's home and then showed up in a storage locker in San Bernardino, which is pretty awesome. Now,
it's rare you get your stuff back.
Now, I've got a couple things to say about this, right? First of all, good job, happy ending. Again, it's hard to steal something, and I think that's probably what the thief realized, was that you can't liquidate Action Comics number one. You just can't. Like, yeah. It's you went through the trouble of stealing it, and I will go through and explain the security, the, for lack of a better term, security system that Nick Cage had set up to protect his comics in a little bit. But he bought, okay, so to give you an idea, first of all, good job, got the comic, happy ending. Secondly, what would ever possess you to steal from Nick? How crazy do you have to be to steal from...
apparently crazier than Nick Cage.
Which is almost impossible! It's almost impossible.
I think the only person who set the bar that high on a personal level, not necessarily being willing to steal, but being crazier than Nick Cage is Gary Busey.
Right. If you were to steal Gary Busey's dentures, that's on par with stealing comic books from Nick Cage.
I think you'd have to be at least a Gary Busey level crazy to consider that theft.
Right.
Or, either one of the thefts.
Or really high. Or very, very high. You know, like, I just imagine my brain that Nick Cage thinks that he's, you know, that's like his genie bottle, like, that Action Comics number one, like, that's why his career went on the decline after the National Treasure movies, which was around the same time as this was stolen, that they took his power focus away, like, you know, somewhere in my mind, I think that this is intrinsically tied to the rise and fall of his star, the theft of Nick Cage's comic. But he bought the comic as preparation for his role in Superman that never got done. okay? That's how crazy he is. How much do you think a mint condition copy of Action Comics number one goes for now, Cole?
I am thinking probably in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I think you're right. I'm actually pulling up a valuation right now. Oh no. It's been sold for the topped out value of $3,207.852. That's how much it goes for. He bought this.
I would not be at the Showcase Showdown on Frost and Friday with my piss poor appraisal there.
He bought this as preparation for a movie that never got made. That's how rich and crazy Nick Cage is. And you stole his comic book. Not only did you steal his comic book, but I've got like Bleeding Cool goes through and actually talked to the detective that was working the case. And keep in mind, this is not the same time, but I think it was a little later that his dinosaur skull got stolen. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, crazy man.
How do you do that?
How do you do anything? Like he says, in reference to Nick Cage, and I'm quoting this detective, he says that he collected everything from rare cars to dinosaur fossils, and he says it looked like at a kid's playground, noting that it included a big robot, two well-groomed dogs fussed over by their handler, a vintage sports car smack in the middle of the room. And he said it looked like the room was built around the 1955 Jaguar that was in there. And while he was working the case, apparently Cage was shouting angrily from behind a closed door. The property manager appeared and led the officer to the scene of the crime. Hanging on the wall were locked, bulletproof display cases where dozens and dozens of vintage comic books from Cage's personal collection were. It was a shrine to superheroes. There were rare copies of Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Green Lantern, Hourman. The fact that he has an Hourman comic book up there tells you that he's an actual comic fan. That I want to say that for sure. Hawkman and the Hulk. Three were empty. It was Detective Comics 27, which was Batman's first appearance, Action Comics number one, and Detective Comics number one were stolen, which is a pretty heavy theft. That's impressive. That is an impressive haul. That's probably, honestly, $5 million worth of comics stolen. And it turned up that at least one of them turned up in that thing. But yeah, I guess Nick Cage was very, very unhappy about that. He said that they were stolen after several big parties, including a giant birthday celebration in his home. Hundreds of people had been in and out of the mansion at that point. So somebody was in that room long enough and alone enough to get into these giant bulletproof, what I imagine in an unfortunate turn of events was like the display case that the Declaration of Independence was in that he needed to steal a national treasure and made off with it, which is unfortunate, but also I have to think that somehow he was involved in the finding of it somehow, because you know he knows people. That's all I'm saying. Knows people that are going to step up and do some things in that area to find what Nick Cage wants him to find. You know what I mean? I guess for me, It's heartbreaking. It's funny in after a fashion because it's Nick Cage. Like, that just makes it sort of amusing to me. That I'm like, no, I'm trapped in this painting with this comic. You know, like it's Nick. I can imagine the whole thing going down. You know, Nick Cage walking into his collection room, his altar, you know, and looking around. Then there's, you know, he's in there for a second and then Stutter steps back and three of his paintings are missing, you know, and he, you know, he picks up the red phone. In my mind, it would be a good setup to a, you know, to almost an action comedy, akin to Fanboys of, you know, breaking into Skywalker Ranch type situation, like if done correctly. But it's for a true comic collector, the intrinsic value isn't money based, and I think that's the point that I really want to make, is how shitty it is to steal. And you're right when you said that it's like stealing art. You know, it's like stealing priceless works of art. Because for me, I don't have an expensive comic book collection. I don't. I have a comic book collection that probably maxes out at like $600, and I have a lot of comic books, and it's probably the paper value for the most part of my comic books. But the intrinsic value of what I have is worth so much more than the value that anybody would put on it if I was selling it. And when you steal from a fan of something, even if it's a signed baseball or a comic book, this insurance will cover it. Insurance will pay you for it as long as it's insured. But you're not giving somebody back the feelings and the emotions and where those things came from and what they mean to you. So it's almost the worst kind of violation.
Get the very thing itself back. You have its value, and you're sort of forced to move on.
Right. There's only one more thing I want to talk about before we wrap up, and it spins out of what I just said. And if you go to there's a website, and that website's called stolencomic.com. You can see where people have posted their stolen comics, either for people to find, but the secondary value is you share your story of your stolen comic with people that have either A, had their stuff stolen too, or B, people that just understand. Very cool. If you can do it, go to stolencomic.com and look at these stories and just see what people are saying. It's pretty sad, to be honest.
It can be a little depressing. Yeah.
But do you have any final thoughts on this, Cole?
I don't want to come off sounding like, blaming the victim or anything.
Right.
But when I have heard about like mega value comics, like the ones mentioned before, like $11,000 comic being stolen from a vendor's display at a convention, I'm like, why do you have the $11,000 comic at a convention? Who's walking around with that kind of cash? And I guess, there must be a press. Somebody must be buying these things, or nobody would be bringing them. Or is it more just a look what we got?
Yeah.
Is it more just like, a big flashing neon sign of, here's something we have that you'll never be able to afford. But, it almost seems to me like it's also at the same time a big flashing neon sign that says, steal me.
Right.
As diligent as everyone tries to be, it's easy to lose track of what all's going on around you, especially in the whirlwind of a convention situation. So, it's always bothered me a little bit that people choose to bring those books. I think it's just safer to leave those somewhere where they're frankly safer.
Right.
Or if you have that kind of book, from a security standpoint, put a facsimile up. So, interested in this $3,000 comic book? Ask to see it.
Exactly. It seems like arrogance and hubris when I see something. And I do see stuff like that quite often, actually. There's a up here, we have Mile High Comics, which is a big comic a big comic house up here.
And famously the first comic shop to ever become publicly traded.
And they'll come to virtually all the conventions. And they always have, multi-thousand dollar vintage books at their booths.
Yeah.
And I look at those, and I was just at... And also, Heroes Aren't Hard to Find does it, too. They're out of North Carolina. They put on Heroes Con every year. And they'll do it, too. They have a section of their booth, like one of the walls of their booth, when they build out their booth, is all vintage comics, all probably ranging between, $500 to a couple thousand dollars. And every time I see that, I'm like, who are you doing this for? You're at a one-day or a two-day convention in Dayton, Ohio. Who are you doing this for? You're doing it for yourself. You're doing it to say, look who we are. And you're at, and like you said, you're begging. You're begging to have some shit stolen. That's what you're doing. You're saying, come and get me.
It's just almost akin to driving your sports car up and leaving the motor running while you're running to get a pack of cigarettes.
Agreed.
You only do that if a squirrel died in the air conditioning system and it would be too expensive to get the smell.
So you're just asking for somebody to actually literally steal your car?
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things we talked about, the comic book, the shop that was ripping people off that way, by literally, effectively stealing their part of their collection from them. You know, some of the things we just sort of half touched on was, you know, the types of people who would take a book like that, you know, with the having a stocking a book for the express purpose of getting it stolen for the insurance value.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Like,
you know, what's a better shot in the arm for your business than, you know, I'm not going to sell this $10,000 comic book, but you know, if it went away, I could,
right.
Stand to have 10K right now would really help us out because, you know, I got to pay for my newest order of pop vinyls.
See, I can't.
Because they're only putting out 750 a year.
Yeah, a week. I can't imagine a world where that exists. And that's my naivete. That's my baseline.
I mean, you would like to think that we're better than that.
Well, I'd like to think that our and again, this is, you know, our community are built on, and we've talked about this back when we were talking about racism and back when we were talking about, you know, sexism and equality, and, you know, that the society that we've built as the royal we nerds, geeks, that only recently have become accepted is built on the Roddenberry inclusionist ideas, and, you know, that we don't need, hell, we don't even need money, you know, like, we,
yeah,
like, you know, that's the idea, and I hate to think that that kind of thing happens within our community. I know it does, you know, I'm not so naive that I don't know that it does, but it really, it upsets me that in this venue, it upsets me more in this venue than any other venue, you know, that this kind of thing happens. And I'm sure there's people that, like I'm sure Hunter could tell you stories about people who have stolen vinyl records, you know. God, I sounded like an old man just then, didn't I? People have stolen the vinyl records.
And there was even a situation where a comic shop owner was, you know, so convinced that a considerable number of his, a vast amount of his employee base, you know, this sort of underlying paranoia that they were stealing from. Ultimately, the strange and perhaps much deserved bit of irony, it turned out one of his most trusted lieutenants was the one who was really ripping him off by going around and spending more money than he was actually spending.
Yeah.
On comic book buying junkets. You know, he was going to conventions to buy inventory and get deals, and registering those deals at a higher purchase price than the actual purchase price and pocketing the difference, and probably making a hefty sum at it before he finally got caught at it.
Man, this story arc's kind of a downer.
Yeah.
Well,
it's kind of.
But that's okay. That's okay, because by issue 4, we're going to bring it back around. We're gonna do a palate cleanser on issue 4 of this story arc. But next week, we have an issue. What's the title of the issue? Because I really like this title.
That one? I'm afraid you're going to have to present that one, because somehow it escapes me.
Okay. Let me go back in and find it, because I
that
really
one get away from me.
It's okay. It happens to,
yeah,
it happens
know,
to all of
these
us.
A lot of times when we're doing a story arc, I'll be telling someone about the arc. And I can literally, almost without exception, I can always name 4 out of 5 issues of the arc. There will always be one.
The next one is The Copyist.
Oh, that's right.
Which is so good. Which we all, you know, if you're friends of ours or acquaintances of ours, or you're, you know, on the Facebooks or on the Twitters, the idea is that there is a large subset of people out there, and this for me is almost it's the worst of them.
This one kind of grabs you in the same way,
right? Because we're not even talking about people's possessions; we're talking about people's ideas and work and livelihood. That people will steal art, airbrush out names, put their names on them, and sell them. Take them to conventions and sell them. And it is a very personal crime. and it strikes home in a lot of ways, and we're going to talk about that next week. But the week after, we're going to talk about real-life heroes, comic book creators, comic book industry insiders doing awesome good things in the communities. So we're going to get back to something positive, and then we're going to wrap up the story arc with the story that started it all that I can't wait. I just can't wait to talk about. So, Cole, why don't you plug us up, and we'll get out of here for the evening.
Absolutely, yes. This has been a remarkable arc, and I look forward to exploring it further. This is, of course, Hey Kids Comics coming in from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. Apologies for this one running a little late and the one before it, but we're slowly getting everything reset. Summertime is upon us, and we're getting our wits about us anew. You can write to us. Please do feel free to write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. The tweets can be found on our Twitter account at the Jedi Cole U. And we do have a Jedi Cole Universe, YouTube account. And I'm hoping to get some more stuff going on that. I'm going to be working with PJ Dunn, the Vega Bomber, see if I can get some video content put together.
Awesome. There you go.
Speaking of conventions where these crimes have all happened, we, of course, have the Convention Awareness Project at cap-tx.info, where you can follow every convention in the great state of Texas all year long.
Beautiful. Yeah, just when you go, make sure you you low-jack your comics. Low-jack them, put little trackers on them, little spider trackers. Also, if you'd like to send me lockets of your hair, I'm going to be building a...
You're going to start a creepy book yourself?
Or? I'm going to start a Hey Kids Comics simulacrum. I'm going to make Solomon Grundy, but he'll be born on a fun day. It'll be great. Oh. Yeah, Solomon Grundy's fun day. That's what we're working on it. All right, it's a working title. Don't judge me too much. So stay tuned.
It's like that Bangles song about Solomon Grundy, which is on Sunday, because that's birthday.
Oh, just another manic Grundy. Why hasn't that been done?
Oh, wow.
R.I.P. Prince. R.I.P. Prince. All right.
Just another manic Grundy.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, join us next week when we talk about the copyist. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
I wish it was Sunday, because that's my birthday. Slaughter Swamp Fun Day? I don't know. Yeah. Another manic Grundy. Good night, everybody.